Are those conch shells or lotus flowers sewn right onto Jagannath's?
Conch shells.
Conch shells. Very nice. And going to Thai also. Conch shell. You have a name for it? The conch shell outfit? Okay. So I looked at Bhagavad Gita this evening and picked up some verses to discuss from chapter 2. Chapter is too basic, right? We should go to chapter 25 or something. But we find in chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita, the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. So if we could just learn chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita, we're set. Right? So let's see if we can learn part of chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita. And I'd like to read three verses. Small child wants to continue the kirtan. Try the pacifier until he spits it out and then tries again. Okay. All right. Chapter 2, text 44, 45, 46. Anybody here has memorized verses from chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita? Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam. Huh? Does anyone know that verse? Like to recite that verse? Go ahead, Sachi Kumar.
Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam Kaya Pahatushetasam
Right. Bing. Anyone else? Family drunk, you know the verse? Go ahead. Samadau na vidyate. Krishna's describing those that will never experience their mind becoming fixed. Samadau na vidhyate. How does the mind become fixed? When the intelligence is so strong, spiritually strong, that the intelligence gives direction to the mind. And the mind obeys, because the intelligence is so strong. Vyavasayatmika buddhi, that kind of intelligence. The kind of intelligence that Krishna personally gives. Universities don't have a course in Vyavasayatmika buddhi. They have the other kind, Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam Taya Purita Chetasam, where the mind becomes too much attached to sense enjoyment and fruitive activities. Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam Taya Purita Chetasam. Too much attracted to sense enjoyment and material opulence. The whole of our Vedic process, at least the whole of our devotional process, we'll say that. The whole of our devotional process is to direct us away from involvement in matter. The term that's used is nivritti. Bhagavatam, Prabhupada writes in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam in his commentary, the Bhagavat Dharma or the Bhagavat Marg is a path of nivritti. Gradually, deliberately and progressively decreasing one's involvement in matter. And what's the best way to ensure that you gradually decrease your involvement in matter, increase your involvement in spirit or Krishna. But you won't increase your involvement in Krishna if there's too much attachment for matter. There's a classic story. It's not even a scriptural, it's just, you know, one of these classic stories, once upon a time. There was a man who was going to see his guru, and he had a burning question. So he went to see his spiritual master and asked. He came to his spiritual master's ashram, paid his obeisances very reverently. Guruji, I have a question. I really want to know the answer to this very important question. Yes, yes, what is it? Why is it so difficult to give up sense gratification, to give up material attachment? Why is it so difficult? Spiritual master said, this is a very deep question. Let me contemplate upon it and you come back tomorrow. So I thought, oh, it's a very deep question. I finally asked a good question. And tomorrow Guruji is going to give me the answer. So he went back home. He could hardly sleep at night. He was so enthusiastic, thinking, tomorrow morning I'll go see Guruji and he'll give me the answer to this very important question. Build up, right? Expectancy. So, as he was heading to his guru's ashram through the path in the forest, he heard a voice in the distance.
Help! Help! Help!
That's Guruji's voice. My guru's in trouble, and he went running through the forest path, and when he got to his ashram, he saw his spiritual master with his arms and legs wrapped around a tree and his head to the side of the tree and calling out, help! Help! And he grabbed a hold of his arms and grabbed hold of his legs and pulled on his torso and pushed against the tree and nothing worked. Guruji, what's wrong? What's wrong? And then his spiritual master stood up and said, now do you understand? It's very difficult to get rid of our involvement in matter when we're too much attached to it. That's the punchline. We were discussing this morning from Canto 1, Chapter 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Narada in that chapter is instructing, excuse me, Chapter 4, Narada is instructing Vyas. Now it goes to chapter 5. Narada is instructing Vyas about the purpose of the Vedas. And while he is indicating to Vyas that people are essentially too much attached to matter, and you know this, still you've written portions of the Vedas which encourage involvement in matter by the performance of various rituals. By the performance of various rituals, according to the codes of the Vedas, one can become purified, gradually elevated in one's material desires to become more refined and more in the quality of goodness, but still attached to material desires, and thereby bound to the cycle of birth and death, because there's still material desires. And although I may have performed good activity, it's still binding upon the performer. So this isn't very well reasoned, Vyas. Especially one who is a liberated soul like you. You know the difference between matter and spirit, and attachment to matter and attachment to spirit. So Krishna is going to now also explain the same thing in the next verse. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nish Trigunya Bhavarjuna. Anyone know that verse? Trigunya Vishaya. Vishaya means sense gratification. Trigunya Vishaya Veda. The Vedas deal mainly with Vishaya, means enjoyment. Specifically, it's sense enjoyment within the three modes of material nature. So those that are in this mode, that mode, or the other mode can be gradually purified. The Vedas deal mainly with that subject. Now, what is Krishna's instruction? Nishtraigunya Bhavarjana. Rise above. Rise above. Don't become attracted to enjoyment within the modes of material nature. Nir dvandva moha. Don't become near as not. Dvandva means duality. Moha means delusion of duality. Nirdvandva nitya sattvasto. Nir yoga kshema atmavan. Instead, become situated in the self. Atmavan. Become situated in the self. Act from the platform of the soul. Act with the interest of the soul. Now, this is preliminary instruction in Bhagavad Gita, but it's instruction that's meant for all of us also. In fact, I decided to speak on these verses because of that reason. It applies to us. One should become self-situated, self-satisfied, not to have a complete conception of self. There has to be a conception of God. Otherwise, the conception is incomplete. What's the self that exists apart from God? No such thing. What's an energy separate from the energetic? No such thing. What's a ray of sunshine apart from the sun? Is there such a thing? No such thing. What's the self separate from God? We had this nice discussion yesterday in our Building Bridges conference. There's one of the Chatur Shloki verses of the Bhagavatam explains that which is seen to have existence and value separate from its source of emanation, Krishna, know that to be my illusory energy. Krishna's illusory energy is the conception, the mistaken conception, that something exists and has value, artha is the Sanskrit word, separate from its source of emanation, separate from Krishna. What's a soul separate from the Supreme Soul? There's no such thing. So being self-situated, atmavan, means, it's implicit, it means to be situated in our natural loving relationship with Krishna. So don't become situated in attraction for bhoga and aishvarya, that's the previous verse, sense gratification and material opulence. Instead, become situated in atmavan, happiness within. Although the Vedas may direct attention, or someone who is a teacher of the Vedas out there somewhere in the spiritual marketplace may be pointing to enjoyment within the three modes of material nature. Tell a little story. Some years ago, I was visiting in Puerto Rico, ISKCON. I was invited to go there, and so I followed. Now I just say no, I can't go to all the places I'm asked to go to. But anyway, so to go from the airport San Juan Airport to the temple. The temple's up on a hill, in Gurabo. It's like a little farm up on a hill, a small mountain. And across the valley is one of the rainforests of Puerto Rico. It's a very beautiful place there. Very beautiful. But to get there, we went through, a residential area. And when we went through this residential area, I saw this big skyscraper being built right in the middle of the residential area. And I said, "What's that?" I asked the person driving me. He said, "Oh, that's a very infamous minister in here in Puerto Rico." I said, "Well, it looks to me like a big building, not like a minister. What is that thing?" He said, "Notice that it's right next to the church." I said, "Oh, yeah, this little church. No, I mean, it's a nice church, but you couldn't put a piece of paper between that big skyscraper and that nice church there. Why are they putting a big skyscraper next to the church?" He said that the preacher has this philosophy that God wants you to enjoy. Work hard, become prosperous, and enjoy. And if you enjoy, you should also give something to God. And he preaches like this, and people go there and they get wealthy. And so he's decided, okay, I'll buy a piece of land right next to the church and I'll build a high-rise residential complex, and for you to live there you have to give X amount of money to the church, and then you can live there and you can come to the church every day and get rich. So before he even built the place, it was all sold out because they wanted to go to that church and hear about how they can Bhogaishvarya or Trigunya Vishaya Veda or Trigunya Vishaya in any case. Enjoy the modes of material nature. Become wealthy and enjoy sense gratification because God wants you to enjoy. Have you ever heard that philosophy before? I've heard that philosophy before. One of the arguments that I heard when I was growing up, God gave earth to man and said, enjoy. So does it really say enjoy, or does it say there's a certain, I forget the phrase now. Not enjoy. Well, anyway, under the care and custody of man. But if someone is put under the care and custody of man, it doesn't mean just exploit or enjoy. I forget, I had some discussion with my parents one time. They asked me, we were sitting at the dinner table, and I asked, "Why are you vegetarian?" I knew it was going to end up in not a happy conversation, but I try to avoid those kinds of, especially with my immediate family, confrontational things. But they asked, they said, because, oh, I know, God gave dominion, that's the word, dominion over the animals. I said, because we should, we don't believe we should give pain and suffering to other living beings unnecessarily. I said, well, in the Bible it says, man was given dominion by God over the animals. So what's wrong? And I made the mistake of saying, when I was small, you had dominion over me. And I didn't even have to finish the sentence. And my mother burst out crying, and my father said, "Why are you making your mother cry?" Don't ask me why I'm a vegetarian. So having dominion doesn't mean, so if you're in charge of something, you give protection to that something, you take care of that something. And if one doesn't have satisfaction from within, then one will look through for satisfaction without. And if we don't have a proper sense of the God-intended purpose of all things, which we may have some dominion over, it'll be exploitation. And nir-yoga kshema atmavan is the final phrase of the verse. Nir-dvandva nitya-sattvasto, become permanently situated beyond duality. And nir-yoga kshema atmavan, be free from all anxieties for gain. That's the fruitive part from the previous verse. And safety. Be free from all cares and anxieties about gain and safety. Because if you're, and be situated in the self. Be situated in the self as understand the true spiritual identity, because he's described that in the earlier section. Now it's how to function in the world where you're situated in knowledge of the soul. The features of duality are not places where you invest value or pretend that there's value in those things. Invest consciousness. Identify with. Rather identify with the nature of the self, because the nature of the self is blissful. Our cares and anxieties of this world is because we've abandoned ourselves and taken on a mistaken identity that's filled with sense gratification, fear, lack of shelter. It's just a place of anxiety. Then, the third verse, we're two-thirds done already. The third verse is another less known verse, but when I read the English translation, you'll recognize it. Yavan artha udapane. Udapane. Udapane means a well. Sarvatak sam pluto decay. It rhymes. Udapane sam pluto decay. The purpose of a small well is immediately, the purpose of that well is immediately taken care of by a large reservoir of water. Now we don't have that model over here in America, but in village life, there's a well. And there's a different wells for different purposes sometimes. Like, you know, a place where one does bathing, a place where one does washing of one's clothes, a place where one draws water for cooking. But if you have a very large body of water, like a river, for example, then all those purposes can be served by one body of water. So Krishna uses this comparison, a metaphor, to say, for one who understands the purpose of the Vedas, that's the sum pluto decay, that's the large body of water, all other purposes are served. All other desirable things can be achieved by achieving one thing. Yes? That's the definition of faith. Anyone know that verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita? Where Lord Chaitanya is defining what is faith? Shraddha, Shabde, Krishne Bhakti. Krishne Bhakti. Sarva Karma Krita Hoya. Shraddha Shabde. What is called Shraddha, what is called faith, is the confidence that by achieving one thing, all other desirable things, all other desirable things. In this world there may be so many desirable things. All other truly desirable, because there are things that people may think I need one of those, and they really don't need one of those. This is the things that we really require. Things that we require. All things that we require, they're automatically taken care of. Faith is the confidence that by achieving this one thing, all other desirable things will be accomplished. In material life, people have faith in something besides God. The whole Divisions of Faith chapter of Bhagavad Gita is on that topic. If people don't have faith in Krishna, Arjuna asks Krishna, people don't have faith in your words. Will they have faith in something? And the answer is yes. Because faith is intrinsic to the soul. You have to have faith in something. It's just natural to the soul. If you don't have faith in Krishna, you'll have faith in something. And if that's something other than Krishna, it's according to the modes of material nature. But Krishna has already just said, my dear Arjuna, the Vedas deal mainly with the modes of material nature, and enjoying within the modes of material nature, don't go there. Nishtraigunya Bhavarjuna. But Atmavan becomes situated in the self. So, situated in the self means having faith in Krishna. And that faith in Krishna is the one thing, that's the big reservoir of water by which all other desirable things, really desirable things, really needed for the well-being of the soul things will be accomplished. Just by achieving that one thing. This, remind you, just say it again, what Krishna is doing in these verses is he's giving Arjuna spiritual intelligence, vyavasayatmika buddhi. He's giving Krishna, giving Arjuna the understanding how that knowledge of the soul distinct from matter can be preserved and carried and sustained even while you're moving about in your day-to-day life. It's understanding what the purpose, here he's saying, the purpose behind the Vedas. So the purpose behind the Vedas is to know Krishna. Is that right? How do we know that's right? What is the scriptural authority for that understanding? The purpose behind the Vedas is to know Krishna. Yeah, 15:15 Bhagavad Gita. Vedaischa sarvair aham eva vejo. Vedanta krit veda vid eva chaham. So, I've tried this experiment a number of times. This group wouldn't work with. But a group that hasn't heard Krishna consciousness, hasn't read Prabhupada's books. If you have a situation where some of you may be speaking sometime before an audience that hasn't read Prabhupada's books, ask them this question. I've done this in the United States and in India and all around the place, and like 4 or 5 times. And it's every time been the same response. Ask your audience at the very beginning, before you just like get acquainted with one another, who would agree? One of them was, I was in Houston, Texas, in the place that's right by NASA. They have like a medical college, so the husband and wife, the wife was a medical doctor and professor, the husband was a NASA researcher, and all the people in the room were either doctors or NASA researchers. So, you know, well-educated, non-resident Indians that hadn't read Prabhupada's books. That was the audience. How many would agree with the following statement and say it's true? But let me finish before you raise your hand. How many would agree with the statement that the purpose, as found within the scriptures, is to teach you how to lead your life in a virtuous way by principles of piety, so that in this life you will prosper in a pious way, you'll be happy in this life, and after this life, you'll attain Swargaloka. How many would agree that's the purpose of the Vedas? even before I got finished, I told them, don't put your hand up yet. Their hand was up. That's the purpose of the Vedas. To enjoy material prosperity. Although it's explicitly described in Bhagavad Gita, Veda Vadarata. Again, another verse in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Mainly, people think that's the purpose of the Vedas. But, and it's several verses. It's like not a sneak. You got to be really watching this one, or it'll slide past you. It's very clear. But still, people, religious people reading Bhagavad Gita think that's the purpose of the Vedas. But that's not the purpose of the Vedas. The purpose of the Vedas is to diminish one's involvement with matter and become situated in the self. And become situated in the self requires being situated in Krishna. Because you can't be situated in the self without being situated in Krishna. You can't be self-realization and God-realization occur simultaneously. We're not going to have one without the other. One devotee asked this question the other day at Penn State. He asked, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes there are different aspects of the Absolute Truth, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Someone knows that verse? Vedanta Tat, Tatva Vedas, Tatvam Yajjnanam Advayam, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdyate. Very good. So the learned Vedantists, they say that the Absolute Truth in the Advaya Tattva, in the non-dual region, realm, is made up of three different features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So the question was, does that mean that we first realize Brahman, and then realize Paramatma, and then realize Bhagavan? The answer is no, because we're hearing from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, that we're real identity is spirit soul. We're also hearing one should be situated in the self, but situated in the self means in relationship with Bhagavan. Although Prabhupada does describe that, maybe you've heard this nice metaphor, he said that as the sun, God realization occurs gradually, like the rising of the sun. So the first part is when it's pitch black out, there's no street lights and it's not a full moon and you've got a mirror in front of your face, what do you see? Nothing, because it's pitch black out. Although the mirror is in front of your face. And when the sun starts to rise, simultaneously you can see the sun, you can see your face in the mirror. And that way, self-realization and God-realization, they occur simultaneously. That's one of Prabhupada's examples. Another is, as the sun rises, there's pitch black, and then gradually, a little bit of it's dawn, there's light in the firmament, but you can't yet see the sun. So it's pitch black, then a little bit of twilight in the morning, and then you can see the direct rays of the sun. Even before you can see the sun. Then you can see the sun coming just over the horizon. And so as the realization of the sun is gradual, God realization is also gradual. Being self-situated is also only because we're attached, it's gradual, and so the path of Bhagavad Gita is to gradually become unattached. The teaching that's there in the Karmakanda section, now I'm going back to the fifth chapter, Canto 1, Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada is cautioning, or actually scolding, Vyas, by persons who are followers of that Karmakanda section of the Vedas. It's actually encouraging them to continue to be attached to matter. He says it's not very well reasoned. Not very good. It's a nice way of saying it's wrong. Instead, teaching one to become, at least strive to become directly attached to the Supreme. Now why, if that's the case, why is this other mentioned in the Vedas? Because some persons are definitely not wanting to become attached to the Supreme. They're wanting sense gratification. And so if I get like these people that all raise their hand, yes. Enjoy prosperity, like this fellow in San Juan. Enjoy. Prosper. Worship God, and He wants you to prosper. And sure enough, we prosper. Oh, we like your teaching. Let's live next to your church so we can prosper. But one to be... In that condition, the resolute determination in devotional service will never take place. So now, I'd like to conclude by the way the Prabhupada concludes. The living entities factually are part and parcel of Krishna. Because they're part and parcel of Krishna, they have a natural loving relationship with Krishna, and all activity should be directed to that, our loving relationship with Krishna. Then Prabhupada concludes the purport by quoting a verse from the Bhagavatam, Aho Bhattasva Pacho To Gariyan Swapacha. What's Swapacha? Dog eater. Even one who is a dog eater, if they become attached to the holy name of the Lord, that person becomes so elevated. I'll read my Lord, a person who is chanting your holy name, although born of a low family like those of the dog eater, that person is situated on the highest platform of self-realization. Not, they, needless to say, they give up that dog-eating propensity and take the activities of one who's a striving transcendentalist. Such a person must have performed all kinds of penances and sacrifices according to the Vedic rituals and studied Vedic literatures many, many times. After taking bath in all the holy places of pilgrimage, at least the benefit of those activities has come to that person just from chanting the holy name. Just from that one activity, the benefits of all other activities are accrued to that person. So, the conclusion in the purport, Prabhupada is describing how important it is to chant the holy name. And chant the holy name, I should add, with faith. Shraddha, Shraddha, Vishvas, Kahesu, Dritha, Nishtaya. Krishna Bhakti. The faith that in this chanting, what is the purpose of this chanting? To awaken our love for Krishna. Our chanting should be performed in that spirit. At least we should strive for that spirit to connect with Krishna, to be present. When chanting the holy name, chant with faith that the holy name of Krishna and Krishna are non-different. The holy name of Krishna and Krishna are non-different. And by His kindness, I'm getting the chance to be present with Him, to be in God's personal association. How fortunate. There was... one other reference I'll make from yesterday. Gauravani said that he had just received from his mother a copy of Prabodhananda Saraswati's Chaitanya Chandramrita. Prabodhananda Saraswati is a fantastic writer. He writes these very, very eloquent verses. And in one of the verses that Gaurabani said he could relate very much to, he said, in this life, I have no attraction for the Vedas. I have not performed any meritorious activities. All abominable activities, you name them, I perform them. Yet somehow or another, despite all this unqualification, lack of qualification, disqualification, somehow by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, I have attraction for the chanting of the holy name. And I feel that is everything. If we can somehow, this is the faith topic, if somehow we can develop that attraction, some attraction, if not attachment, not just to completing our prescribed rounds, but attachment, an attraction for the holy name, attraction to associate with Krishna, and develop our feelings of devotion for Krishna, if somehow, even the aspiration for that, somehow, if I can achieve that, all other desirable things, I subordinate all other desirable things to that one thing. You know what will happen? Krishna will show himself to you. Transcendentally speaking, Krishna is dancing on our tongue, according to Rupa Goswami, just by being present by that sound vibration, and we say, Krishna. Krishna is dancing on our tongue. It's in one of his prayers. And it's true, the sound of Krishna and Krishna are non-different. He's dancing on our tongue. Krishna. Krishna. Krishna is dancing on our tongue. But we don't have that realization. Why we don't have that realization? We're too much attached to matter. And somehow hanging on to that tree. Help! Help! Let go of that source of our own misery and become situated in the self and render our services unto Krishna that very kindly are being provided to us in that spirit from the soul without attachment to bhoga or aishvarya or the delusion of duality that we're so addicted to. It becomes situated in the self. This is Krishna's advice. And you know, if you hear the message of Bhagavad Gita with your heart open to Krishna's message, it goes in. It's not just information for the you have computer storage up here, your data bank. It goes into your heart and it cleanses your heart. Krishna's message as well as Krishna's name. Actually, we've been given everything that we need. There's not some secret formula or something that's not been presented to us. We just need to take the words that Krishna is giving to heart. Krishna is speaking to us. He wants to pull us out of material existence. Common example that's given is someone's at the bottom of a well and they're looking up at the top of the well and there's just this hole up there long distance away. You can't possibly climb out of the well unless somebody by grace of God comes to the top of the well and has even the means to pull you out of the well, and there's somebody, and they're lowering a rope down into the well. Grab onto the rope. And the process of bhakti is so wonderful, you just not even have to climb up the rope, just hold on to the rope. You'll get pulled out of the well, because that person who's extending the well has the means to pull you out of the well, along with the rope. So taking shelter of the instructions that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, that means making your life consistent with these instructions. They're meant for us to deliver us. Then our lives become complete. The path of the human form of life becomes consummated by taking Krishna's instructions. And here Prabhupada is including chanting this samplutodike, this one body of water that takes care of all the other purposes. Chanting the holy name without offense. Chanting with faith that Krishna and his holy name are non-different. We've heard it so many times. Chant with faith. With faith, the indication of faith is you're not somewhere else. Your attention isn't somewhere else when chanting. Your attention is with Krishna. Strive like that, and all perfection, everything desirable will come. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? This is the first time I've been here in Baltimore Temple for a Sunday program. Been here for weekdays. It's nice. Sundays, even nicer. Any comments? Yes. Huh?
No comment.
No comment. Question.
How can develop faith?
How to develop faith? One thing that Prabhupada, there's several things. One thing that Prabhupada writes directly in Bhagavad Gita is through association with those who have faith, the devotees who have faith. Sangat sanjayate kama. He uses that phrase. Through association we develop the qualities like those with whom we associate. Very easy. You associate with faithful persons, you become faithful. Of course, that's if you want faith. Another way to strengthen faith or nurture faith is to act in knowledge. Of course, then you have to have proper knowledge. You have to have enough sense to act on it. But you act on knowledge and something happens. You get some realization. And when you get realization, it nurtures your faith. Practical example. Supposing somebody tells you, you go for a checkup and you're feeling a pain. And you go to a doctor and the doctor says, oh, you might have such and such problem. You need some medical exam, thorough medical exam. So, we want to make sure you're going to the right doctor. So you ask around, this doctor, that doctor, the other doctor. This is a very, very good doctor. You don't know because you never just heard the name. But based on recommendation of some faith, you go to that doctor. Let's say, supposing it's an Ayurvedic doctor. He takes your pulse. So now you're checking him out. What's his manner? Is he good at pulse reading? Your doctor says, do you have a pain in your left knee? Well, yeah, I have a pain in my left knee. How did you know? Well, it says it in your pulse. And something, something, something. Oh, he's a good pulse reader. Okay, so this is the situation. You need to follow this diet, take that medicine. Enough faith that I'll try it. I'm not sure it's right, but I have enough faith, I'll try it. Supposing it's right, follow the diet, take the medicine, and you start to get some result. So what happens? You have faith, and that's a good doctor. You go back to the doctor next time and you refer other people to that doctor because this man has good medicine, he has a good pulse reading. When we act in knowledge, similarly with spiritual understanding. So we read something in Bhagavad Gita. We read a whole bunch of things in Bhagavad Gita. Out of so many things that we read in Bhagavad Gita, we sit and spend some time with a devotee. One thing particularly resonates. So apply it. Implement it in your life. See what happens. How many times have we all had this experience? We encourage someone to chant. Just try it. Two rounds a day. Can you manage, you know, 10, 15 minutes a day? Experiment, try it. That's what happened to me. Someone said, just try it. 2 weeks. Spend 15, 20 minutes. Okay. What's the loss? But after doing 15, 20 minutes for 2 weeks, wow. Faith. So faith is nurtured by acting with proper knowledge. Something happens. And a third is by associating with Krishna through his transcendental teachings. Just as with Arjuna is asking questions that are in the form of doubts. And when those doubts are dispelled, that which is blocking our convictions or faith is removed. So carefully reading, carefully studying Krishna's words will help nurture faith. That's a good start. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the entire range of bhakti from Shraddha to Prema is simply different stages of faith, all the way up to Krishna Prema. Krishna Prema can be described, he says, as just a mature state of faith. Because the immature state is some preliminary faith, but faith is intrinsic to the soul, and so in its mature stage is love for Krishna. And each step that we take, acting with some trust in the words of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this can take us to Krishna. Then it nurtures faith. Anything else? You're making it too easy for me. Yes?
Maharaj, when I was reading his prayers on Sikshashtaka.
Okay.
That's fourth one. Nandana.
Okay.
I don't want I don't want money, I don't want followers. But whenever I read that, I don't want money, but I'm working for making money. How can I?
Okay. How do you apply that in your life? Nandanam?
I don't want money, but when I go out, I'll be working for making only money.
Well, we can encourage your employer, don't pay you. No, Maharaj, please don't do that. The devotional approach to that is you work for Krishna. So when the paycheck comes, it's Krishna's. Because where did the ability to go to work come from? Where did the intelligence to go to work come from? Where did the instruments, namely the senses, the body, come from? Etc. Everything is coming from Krishna. So it's the strength, capacity, the ability, everything comes from Krishna. So it belongs to Krishna. And then you can make your expenditure on Krishna's account. You put it in Krishna's account, and you make your expenditure. I'll pay Krishna's rent or mortgage, whichever it is. I'll make Krishna's car payment. I'll make Krishna's insurance payment. I'll. But, you know, the car may be in your name, but your consciousness is it belongs to Krishna. Or Chiru Prabhu was giving us another example. Would you like to hear what Chiru Prabhu said today? When you receive your paycheck, he was using the Mormon tithing model. The first two checks that you write, 5% goes to the temple, 5% goes in your emergency account. And see what happens with the rest. You know, you'll understand it belongs to Krishna. So make those expenditures, you use that resource as Krishna's energy. That's who Lakshmi is. She's the consort of Narayan, not yours, to enjoy. So Nadana means don't be Ravan. Don't try to enjoy Sita without Ram. You protect Sita. You care for Sita as the energy of Ram. And Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune. Manifest in this form, let me respect Lakshmi and use Lakshmi in service to Narayan, not in my own service. So that's Nadanam. Yeah. Cultivate that consciousness and it'll become part of how you think of the fruits of your work. Something else? Yes?
Thank you for the fact, Maharaj. It was like directly addressing to all my concerns.
Okay. That's quite an accomplishment. That made me think of another concern. Go ahead.
Submission.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like you're not able to completely separate because of your attachment, or sometimes it's like your natural tendency. I mean, how do we?
Now, natural tendency needs to be understood as spiritual. There's svadharma, that's in terms of our psycho-physical covering. And in one sense, that's what's natural, but in a deeper sense, that's not natural. That's a diseased condition. And the natural condition is from the platform of the soul. Your yoga kshema atmavan. That's what's natural. So, supposing we're not there and we're in this covered condition where we're receiving impulses born of the modes of nature and saying, you want this and that's going to make you happy, and the modes of nature pushing and pulling. Don't identify with that. You may recognize that conditioning and act in a way that will regulate and properly direct that conditioning, hopefully elevate that conditioning, but don't identify with it. It's not who we are. That's the key thing. We're not the covering. And the modes of nature and the body made up of the modes of nature, both gross and subtle mind, as well as gross body, not our nature, ultimately. But recognizing at least I'm in this condition state, so I should regulate all of that in a theistic way, under the guidance of by according to the codes of the scripture and under guidance of spiritual direction. I'll recognize that's my conditioning and I'll direct it properly. But meanwhile, let me keep my attention upon Krishna, the goal, and the soul's connection with Krishna. Otherwise it's incomplete. Any effort is not going to be satisfying. Any effort is not going to be satisfying. Theistic or atheistic, not going to be satisfying. one, you can say one is better than the other. Theistic is better than atheistic. But it's still not going to be satisfying. We want satisfaction. We want a deep sense of satisfaction. Not just things are going well instead of things are troublesome. This mode instead of that mode. We want satisfaction in our relationship with Krishna. That we should strive for, at least. In the course of leading our lives in a theistic way. Anything? Okay. You're all a satisfied group of people or very hungry, one or the other. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.